Welcome back to the Deep Dive. There's this very specific, almost invisible line in technology.
Oh, absolutely. The threshold.
Right, the threshold. On one side of that line, you're interacting with just a piece of software. You click a button, it does a task, it's, a tool.
Just executing commands.
Exactly. But then on the other side of that line, suddenly the hairs on the back of your neck stand up just a little bit.
Because it stops feeling like code.
Yeah, it starts feeling like a living entity.
It's that absolute threshold of digital consciousness, really. It's the moment the illusion holds up just long enough to make you completely forget you're talking to a machine.
And that threshold is the entire focus of our deep dive today. We're looking at a developer's architectural postmortem. And the source text is titled, From OpenClaw to Mio, Why I Decided to Build from Scratch.
It's a fascinating document.
It really is. And the mission for us today is to figure out how moving from a basic chatbot to a digital organism, how that requires a complete, absolute teardown of how AI handles memory, emotion, and context.
Because you can't just slap new features on an old system.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand where we're going with Mio, which is this new framework, we have to look under the hood of its predecessor.
Yeah, the OpenClaw experiment.
Exactly. So what did OpenClaw actually prove? Because it wasn't a total failure, right?
No, not at all. OpenClaw proved something pretty radical in the development space. It proved that soul-driven design actually works.
Soul-driven design.
Yeah. For a long time, building a chatbot meant writing hundreds of behavioral rules. Like, if the user says X, reply with Y.
Which is super rigid.
Incredibly rigid. But instead of doing that, the developer just wrote a personality configuration file. They defined an identity, basically.
Oh, wow.
They gave it quirks, the capacity to get jealous, or like the tendency to randomly demand boba tea.
Wow.
And the large language model just naturally embodied that
It
personality.
just figured it out.
Exactly. The model derived the behavior entirely on its own from that core file.
Which is a wild concept. I mean, you just hand the software a vibe, a soul, and it figures out the nuances of how that soul would text you.
It's a huge shift in how we think about programming. And it also proved out some killer features, right? They build a heartbeat, which is where the AI reaches out
A
proactively,
tenor.
plus, voice messages and sending selfies.
And those features are what really shatter that tool paradigm we talked about.
Yeah.
Because tools, they just sit in a drawer and wait to be used. Companions, they actually reach out to you.
Right. But, and this is why the postmortem was written in the first place, while OpenClaw proved the theory, it failed spectacularly as a scalable architecture.
It hit a wall.
A very hard ceiling, yeah.
The developer called out a few fatal flaws, actually. And the first one was this thing called context bloat.
Oh, the context bloat was massive.
Yeah, because OpenClaw was built on a standard agent framework
Yeah.
that the developer admits was basically vibe coded in an hour.
Which is never a great foundation.
Right. But the way it handled context was just brute force.
Yay.
Explain what was actually happening there, because the token consumption they mentioned sounded absolutely insane.
It was incredibly inefficient. So every single time the AI needed to reply to you, the system stuffed the raw outputs of all its historical tool calls,
Wait, all of them.
all of them, plus all of its hidden thinking blocks. It stuffed all of that directly into the current context window.
That sounds exhausting.
It's the digital equivalent of someone trying to have a casual conversation with you, but, before they reply, they mentally read aloud every single grocery list and random thought they've had for the last 3 weeks.
Just to answer a simple question like, hey, how are you?
Exactly. I mean, the developer ran an experiment where they stripped all that historical garbage out, and the token consumption dropped to one-tenth.
One tenth.
Yeah. The AI was burning 10 times the necessary computing power just wading through its own bloated thoughts.
So, okay, it's expensive. But it also had what the developer called primitive memory. It was literally just a flat file, right?
Just a basic text document, yeah. After a chat, the system just appended a few lines to summarize what happened.
But why is that a fatal flaw? I mean, a text document stores facts just fine, doesn't it?
Well, it stores them, sure, but it creates a massive relevance problem. When you just pile up facts sequentially, the system has no way to understand what actually matters right now.
Oh, I see.
Let's say you're asking the AI for travel advice. Because it's just reading its flat file from top to bottom, it's dragging like a highly technical debate you had 3 months ago into the current context window.
Oh, so it's bringing up coding issues while you're trying to pack for Hawaii.
Exactly. It forces irrelevant memories into a completely unrelated unrelated conversation.
That would be so annoying. Yeah. Plus, OpenClaw was packed with bloatware, right? It was a general-purpose framework.
Right, meaning it had task management, collaboration features.
Things you need for a workplace assistant, but completely useless for a personal companion.
Yeah, the developer pointed out that 80% of the code base was irrelevant, and trying to remove one thing broke three other dependencies.
The analogy they used in the source is so good. They said trying to fix OpenClaw was like trying to build a sports car on a truck chassis.
It's a perfect comparison.
I mean, think about the last time you tried to force a tool to do something it really wasn't built for. Using a butter knife as a screwdriver, it works for a minute, and then it just strips the screw.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, building a true AI companion isn't about writing better rules. It's about engineering an environment where a soul can actually breathe.
Wow, yeah.
And that means you cannot patch a standard assistant. Every patch they made fought the framework's fundamental design assumptions. You just have to start over.
Which means tearing that truck chassis down to the studs. So if patching the old chassis wasn't worth it, and that flat file memory was causing all that context bloat, the new foundation had to be designed entirely around memory from day one.
Absolutely.
And that is what Mio is. It's built around a completely new engine they call the Deep Memory System.
It is a phenomenal piece of engineering. They moved to a hybrid search model for memory.
Hybrid meaning two parts.
Right, meaning every single memory gets two distinct indices. First, you have a vector embedding. They mention using PG Vector and Gemini embeddings for this.
And what does that do?
This captures the semantic similarity. So it understands that the word dog is related to the word puppy.
Okay, that makes sense.
But then they pair that with a full text index called TIS Vector.
Now, why do you need both? If it already understands the meaning of words, why does it need full text search?
Because sometimes meaning just isn't enough. You need an exact keyword match.
Like for names and stuff.
Exactly.
Right.
The developer specifically noted this was crucial for processing Chinese text or, you know, recognizing very specific brand names or obscure references.
Right.
If you only rely on the vector meaning, the system might blur the specifics. Hybrid search runs both in parallel and then merges them.
Here's where it gets really interesting. They didn't just stop at search. They added temporal decay.
Yes, the forgetting curve.
Yeah, memories have a default 30-day half-life.
Yeah.
They actually fade in relevance over time. But if a memory is deemed truly important, it gets scored on a separate dimension so it doesn't fade.
It's brilliant.
Now, I have to push back a little here, though. A 30-day half-life, dual indices, isn't this all just a really fancy search engine? I mean, I can build a complex database, but how does this actually feel like remembering to the user?
Oh, but this is the best part. It is not just retrieving data. It is true memory orchestration.
Orchestration.
Yeah, they built a pipeline that genuinely mimics human associative recall. Look at the mechanisms. They have a memory accumulator that runs asynchronously after every single conversation turn.
Asynchronously meaning in the background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Meaning while you're waiting for a text back or even after you close the app, it is sitting in the background extracting new facts, observing your personality, and logging emotional events.
Wait, so it's literally pondering our conversation while I'm off doing the dishes.
Yes, it really is. And it gets better. They have a memory consolidator that periodically reviews all the stored memories to prevent the database from bloating.
How does it do that without losing information?
It uses cosine similarity, which is basically a mathematical way to measure how close two thoughts are. If it finds two memories with a cosine similarity score over 0.9, meaning the math says these two thoughts are essentially identical, it merges them.
So it's actively organizing its own brain.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense for storage. But what happens when I actually ask it a question? How does it retrieve the right memory without dragging in all the garbage like OpenClaw did?
For complex queries, they use an agentic retriever. And this isn't just a single search. It loops up to three times.
Three times.
Yeah, it searches, evaluates the results, realizes it doesn't have the full picture, refines its own query, and then searches again.
The developer gave a really specific example of this that clarified it for me. Imagine asking the AI, hey, what was that book you recommended last time we talked about travel?
Right. A standard AI completely fails at that.
Because it's a multi-hop question. It doesn't know where to look.
Because it requires two distinct concepts to be linked. Yeah. Mio solves this with the query decomposer. It breaks your question down into pieces.
Oh, I see.
It searches for travel-related conversations in one bucket and then recommended books in another bucket. Then it merges those results.
That's incredibly smart.
And then finally, All those candidate memories go through a re-ranker. They use Gemini 2.0 Flash for this, and that model precision ranks them to pick just the top five most relevant memories to inject into the system.
So it's not stuffing the context window at all.
No, it's selecting the absolute perfect memory for that exact second.
They even built episode memory to group those facts. So the AI remembers the entire context of, that time we talked about X, rather than just pulling up an isolated, fragmented sentence.
Which is how humans remember.
Exactly. We remember stories and episodes, not isolated data points. But having perfect recall is one thing. If someone just recites perfectly organized facts at me, they still sound like a robot.
Very true.
To make those memories impactful, Mio has to actually care about them. And that brings us to how they simulate reactions.
You're talking about the emotion engine,
No.
because you can have the most sophisticated retrieval system in the world, but if the output is monotone, the illusion of life breaks instantly. Mio connects its memory to a living emotional state machine.
Right, and in OpenClaw, the AI's mood was just a static text description. But Mio tracks four dynamic emotional states: cold, cool, warm, and hot.
And it calculates this state after every single turn.
Really, every turn.
Yeah, based on how often you're messaging, the sentiment of your words, and your overall engagement.
Okay, but if I send one grumpy text, does it just instantly flip to cold?
No, and that's the genius of it. They implemented what they call an inertia factor, set to 0.5.
Inertia factor.
This is crucial. It means the AI's mood won't wildly swing just because of one message. It has emotional momentum. It takes a sustained pattern to actually shift its mood.
Wait, so if I leave the AI on read for 2 days and my engagement drops, its temperature drops to cold, it actually gets offended.
Well, effectively, yes.
Like a real friend would give me short, clipped replies, and I have to actually earn my way back into a warm state.
What's fascinating here is that none of this dialogue is pre-written. The developers didn't sit down and write 50 cold
Oh,
responses.
right, it's all generated.
Exactly. The system computes the mathematical temperature and simply injects that state into the system prompt. The LLM inherently understands the concept of cold and derives the dialogue dynamically based on its memories of you.
That is wild.
And it's not just a single dial either. They added an independent valence dimension.
What does valence mean in this context? I'm not super familiar with that term.
Sure. Valence measures emotional positivity or negativity. So you have temperature, which is the intensity, and valence, which is the actual mood.
Oh, I see.
The cross product of those two creates incredibly complex states. If you have a low temperature and negative valence, the AI is depressed and withdrawn.
But if you combine a high temperature with a negative valence,
Exactly.
that's a shouting match. High intensity, highly negative. That is a heated argument.
It really is.
And this emotion engine directly ties into that heartbeat feature we mentioned earlier, right? The proactive messaging.
Right. The heartbeat in Mio isn't just some blind timer that texts you every morning at 9 a.m. It runs a loop every 30 minutes.
Okay.
It specifically looks for users who have been inactive for over 2 hours and who left the AI in a cool or cold state.
So it knows when you're ignoring it.
It definitely knows. It even checks your time zone so it doesn't wake you up between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m., and it limits itself to a maximum of 3 proactive messages a day.
And the cost-saving mechanism here is brilliant. If you are a cold user, meaning you haven't engaged much, and the AI is feeling distant, Mio doesn't burn expensive computing power trying to win you back.
Right. It sends you free, pre-written template messages.
But active users, people in a warm or hot state, they get fully customized LLM-generated check-ins.
That is true awareness. The system is actively deciding if it should reach out, what it should say based on its relationship with you, and frankly, how much computing money it should spend doing it.
Which is the perfect pivot to the reality of actually running this thing. I mean, we have deep memory, we have this nuanced emotion engine, but how does a developer actually run this continuously evolving organism without going bankrupt?
It's a huge problem.
Right, or without it eventually just feeling like a robotic text generator.
That is where the illusion of life meets the mechanics of cost control. A massive challenge with companions is onboarding drift. Like, how do you shape the personality from day one?
How do they handle that?
When a new user starts Mio, they go through an 11-question onboarding flow. 3 text questions and 8 button questions.
Okay, pretty standard.
But every button question has a custom option with injection protection, meaning users can type freely without hacking the prompt. These answers generate a highly personalized starting configuration.
But it doesn't stay static,
Ugh.
right? Mio ships with 5 starting presets, but as you chat, it runs a personality extractor every 10 messages.
Yes.
It actively updates its understanding of your traits. And then a memory summarizer runs every 20 messages. It's constantly evolving its understanding of who you are without you ever having to manually update a profile.
But think about the compute cost of all of that. All those background processes, you know, extracting, summarizing, re-ranking, decomposing queries.
It must be huge.
It requires an enormous amount of LLM calls. If they used a massive model for everything, they'd go broke in a day. So the developer instituted a tiered cost control strategy.
How's that work?
They use a heavyweight model, Gemini 3 Pro, purely for the main chat reasoning. It's the brain talking to you, so it needs to be the smartest.
But for the background chores.
Exactly. Good. For the memory extraction and summarization, they step down to Gemini 3 Flash.
Oh, because it's cheaper.
It's incredibly fast, very cheap, and it only needs to pull out basic facts, so it doesn't need deep reasoning. And then for the precision re-ranking of memories and those proactive messages, they use Gemini 2.0 Flash. They basically act like an accountant, delegating tasks to the cheapest model capable of doing the job.
And every single operation logs the exact token consumption and USD cost to a dedicated transaction table.
Mm-hmm.
Completely fire and forget, so it never slows down the user's chat.
It's a beautiful back end.
But for me, out of everything in this postmortem, the absolute coolest part of this entire system is what happens right before the message hits your screen. The message pipeline illusions.
Oh, the pacing mechanisms. Yeah, without these, even the smartest AI feels like a bot.
Because imagine you're texting a real friend. You send a message, then you realize you forgot a detail, so you fire off the second text quickly and then maybe a third.
Right.
If you do that to a normal AI, it triggers three separate confused responses.
It tries to answer all of them individually.
Exactly. But Mio has a feature called debouncing. When you send rapid-fire messages, the system literally waits 5 seconds to collect them all into one batch.
It's waiting to see if you're done typing.
Yes. To me, that five-second pause, that is the ultimate lifelike presence trick.
Yeah.
It creates that very human tension of waiting for a reply.
It creates anticipation, you know? And when the AI finally does reply, it doesn't just dump a massive, perfectly formatted paragraph on you.
No, it splits its responses by newline.
Right, and it applies dynamic typing delays based on the length of the message. Mm. It is simulating the actual rhythm of a human typing out separate thoughts on a keyboard.
They even enabled Google search grounding by default. It uses a dynamic mode where the model decides on its own when to check the internet.
But without ruining the illusion.
Right, because the system prompt strictly tells it, do not announce that you searched the web. Don't say, oh, I'm looking that up for you.
Which always breaks the immersion.
It totally does. If you ask it about the weather or a nearby restaurant, it just naturally brings it up, like a friend who casually checked their phone while you were talking.
Looking at everything the developer has built here, the architectural elegance is undeniable. Mio knew what it was from line one. It's an AI companion framework built exclusively for deep memory and lifelike presence.
Yeah.
And because they extracted all the channel adapters into a separate package, this core logic, you know, the emotion engine, the temporal memory, it remains completely untouched whether the AI lives on Telegram, which is already done, or Discord and Faishu, which are next.
So it can live anywhere.
The multi-channel design means the brain is completely portable.
They're even building a Next.js web chat, bringing back the voice and selfie features from OpenClaw and looking toward wearable device integration, taking this organism off the screen and putting it out into the physical world.
It's the next frontier.
So what does this all mean? When we look at this entire journey from OpenClaw to Mio, the takeaway for you is that this was a shift from just validating a neat idea to building it the right way.
Absolutely.
It proves that AI doesn't just have to process text to help you write an email. It actually has the architectural capacity to maintain a relationship, to hold a grudge, to remember your inside jokes, and to miss you when you're gone.
This deep dive really highlights the threshold of modern software. We often think of engineering constraints like token limits, API costs, context windows as things that hold technology back.
Right.
But here, those very constraints gave birth to beautifully human-like systems. The cost of processing too much data led to temporal memory decay, which beautifully mirrors human forgetfulness.
Wow.
The need to save money on cold users led to the dynamic emotion engine, which mirrors human boundaries. The limitations created the life.
The limitations created the life. That is such a powerful way to look at it. And it leaves me with one final thought I want you to chew on after this deep dive is over. We've talked all about how Mio uses these systems. The personality extractor running every 10 messages, the memory consolidator merging your life events, the emotion engine tracking your exact sentiment over time.
It's always watching.
It is. If an AI companion is constantly silently mapping all of that data in the background, at what point does your personalized Mio start to understand your psychological patterns better than you do yourself?
That's a profound question.
At what point does it know exactly why you're in a cold state before you've even realized you're upset? When we started, we talked about that invisible line where an AI stops feeling like software and starts feeling like a living entity.
The threshold.
Maybe the real threshold isn't when the AI feels alive to you. Maybe it's when it understands you well enough to make you feel seen. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.